This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Children sleeping in state offices, overworked caseworkers, and missed check-ins with potentially endangered children were just a few of the problems that Child Protective Services faced last year. State leaders called it a scandal. A federal judge said something needed to be done. Child protection and foster care system, they were deemed a priority for the Texas leadership and lawmakers in the 85th legislative session. Fixing Child Protective Services was one of Governor Greg Abbott's designated emergency items. How did the Texas legislature respond to the crisis? What bills became law? What fixes are now in the system? How are we moving forward? We ask you to call in with your questions and comments. What do you see? What do you want to see happening with CPS? The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. We're joined by Annette Rodriguez. She's the president and CEO of the Children's Shelter, and also Katie Olse. She's the executive director for the Texas Alliance of Child and Family Services. And Dimple Patel is here. She is a senior policy analyst for TexProtect. And welcome to The Source, all of you. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having us.
Annette Rodriguez, let me ask you, over at the Children's Shelter, what did you take from the legislative session? We know that Governor Greg Abbott signed a slew of bills that are designed to try to find solutions for CPS.
Well, it was a monumental session, and what we saw was legislators really taking a hard look at our child welfare system, both DFPS, our Department of Family and Protective Services, but also the providers of where these children are receiving services. And so a lot of monies were put into the system, particularly in specific areas where the state wants to see growth. So one of the areas that we saw particular focus on is working with children with higher needs. We know that many of the children who are staying in foster care, who linger in the foster care system, often have more behavioral needs, mental health needs that need to be addressed. And so one of the areas where more monies were put in was in a reimbursement rate to serve those children so that they're receiving adequate care and the care that they need.
Now, we've had you on it before, Annette Rodriguez. You know, you're a friend of the show. And when you were here before going into the legislative session, we talked about what you wanted to get out of the session. And a couple of things I remember you said you wanted more authority to able to help these kids and get them the services that they need. And also you wanted to get more money because you were losing money from this. Every time you brought a child came into the children's shelter, the state would only pay for so much. So how did you do?
Well, the Children's Shelter offers a variety of different services. We have foster care, where we have foster homes and work with foster families. We have a residential treatment center that works with children with higher needs. And we have an emergency shelter where children who have just recently been removed or newly removed have come into the home. And when you look at all of those three different types of services, they each have different contracts. So our RTC did well because the state is funding specialized children. Those are children with higher needs. We got a small increase with our foster care program. There was a significant increase for foster families, so the pass-through that will go to foster families will greatly help them in the work that they do. There is a bit of a concern in that our CPAs, our child placing agencies, also need support so that we can help train the families and support them in the way that they need so that they can provide the adequate care for children in the homes. And so we'd like to see a little more movement maybe in future sessions with that. And with our emergency shelter, we were able to maintain funding. We didn't get an increase, and we continue to believe that emergency shelter services are a much needed service for our community. And that'll be something that we're going to be talking to our legislature about in the next 2 years, because we believe that it's a continued needed service and one that should be funded.
Katie Olse over at the Texas Alliance of Child and Family Services, what kind of grade would you give the legislature for the bills they turned into laws?
Well, when I was here on your show a few months ago, we talked about the great deal of promise this legislature had to really improve the child protection system, and I would give them an A for effort. And I think they really passed some.
You don't get an A for effort. You get an E for effort. A is for deliverables.
If I give them an A for everything, then there's no room for improvement. I think we all know that this is going to be a long game. Improving child protection is not going to happen in 2 years, but they definitely invested in improvements for the entire system. That's including prevention, services stage for families before removal, children in foster care, after foster care, youth aging out. They also set a course for direction, the way they want the state to go in, using data, oversight, quality, performance-based contracting.
And So you're satisfied with how things are going, but I'm hearing from a lot of people that it's a cautious optimism. Is that where you are?
Yes, I think that's absolutely fair. The real work begins now. Session is over. They've adjourned. Temporarily adjourned.
Yeah, and now, they'll be coming back on the 15th, I believe, of July for a special session. But none of these items are on the call. They feel like they've done the work and they've got the bills done.
That's right, and they've set the course. They've given the direction to the state and to all of us, the stakeholders, and now it's our job to implement it and to report back.
Dimple Patel, you're the senior policy analyst for Text Protects, but also you're a former caseworker at CPS. So tell me about. As a former caseworker, and a lot of what happened was they provided more money. They went from $3.5 billion. That's the previous 2-year budget cycle budget that they had for it. Now it's $4 billion. A lot of that money is supposed to go towards salaries for caseworkers. Do you think that's going to make a difference?
That's a huge piece of reducing a lot of the issues that we're facing in the CPS system. So as a former caseworker, I was a supervisor as well for the last 3 years that I was at CPS. And one of the hardest things that I had to do was try and keep my caseworkers. And for $34,000 a year, it's really hard to attract quality caseworkers that want to stay at this job. A lot of them just stay for a year or two and leave. And so our biggest victory, I think, came before session even started, and that was the monumental salary increases that were approved in December for CPS caseworkers. So each of the frontline caseworkers that work in the field directly with children and families received a $12,000 salary increase, which makes their job much more competitive with an entry-level social worker.
Right, because when you have unemployment rate in the state that's below 5%, there's a lot of opportunities out there. You really have to convince someone to take that salary level, which is, you know, lower than average, and then and make that sacrifice for their own family, including all the extra hours and stress that being a CPS worker would entail. And so, but what was it like being a CPS caseworker?
It was really difficult. I mean, I always told people when I hired them as a supervisor, you won't. This is not a 40-hour a week job. You will have plans that you have to cancel. There's going to be times where you're spending the night at the office. There's times where you're going to be working all weekend. And so this job really becomes your life. But the people that work there and choose to work there are so passionate and they care so much about children. They're drawn to this work because they want to make a difference in kids' lives. And so it was an incredibly rewarding job, but it was incredibly draining. I lasted 9 years there, but most people usually just last 1 or 2 years because it's that draining.
But you're still involved. You're a policy analyst. And so when we come back from the break, we'll talk more about the policies that have been crafted in the legislative session. There were a number of emergency bills that came out of the lawmakers and to the desk of Greg Abbott, and he signed them with much pomp and ceremony, declaring that they have figured out a way to fix the system. We'll see if what our experts have to say, what our panel says about that. Also, our phone lines are open. If you got a question or a comment, what do you want to see happen with CPS, Child Protective Services? This is an agency that has been gotten a lot of scrutiny. People have asked a lot of questions, and when they mess up, little children are hurt, so the stakes are very high. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about reforms made to Child Protective Services, CPS, in the recent legislative session. There's more money in the system now. The budget increased from $3.5 billion from the previous 2-year cycle to $4 billion. But is that going to be enough, and is the money going to go to the right places? We have a panel of experts with us, but also our phone lines are open. If you're a foster parent or you want to be a foster parent, call in with your questions and comments. We'd like to hear from you. If you're thinking about being a foster parent, we'll tell you why that might be a really good idea. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. During the legislative session, reading the coverage about reforms to CPS, we kept seeing the words privatization. And there was a lot of controversy about whether or not they're going to privatize it. And that's kind of what actually happened. But Annette Rodriguez, president and CEO of the Children's Shelter, you welcomed this privatization. And kind of if you take the bullet points as is, it sounds bad, but it's really, you say it's not that bad.
It's not bad at all.
It's a good thing, you say.
It's an absolutely good thing. What it does, what Senate Bill 11 does is it allows the state, currently the state has over 300 contracts that they have to manage to be able to provide the services that they provide across the state. With this new approach, community-based care, they would be managing about 17 contracts. And what that would do is it would contract with a lead agent in a region, and that lead agent then is responsible for creating a very comprehensive collaborative network, ensuring that the children are receiving services that they need and that the services are available to them, and working with families. One of the things that we want to do is we want to reunify children. We want a permanent place for children to stay, and many of those places will be homes with either their biological families and or with their relatives. And so in that network of services, we want to make sure that while they're in the system, they're receiving the adequate care and all the things that they need. But in the same time, if there's a chance that that child can go back home, that we're working with families so that that home is ready to receive that child when that child is ready to go home.
But when we hear privatization of social services, people think that this is just another way for the state to try to provide services on the cheap and also pass off responsibility to another party. We've seen it before with things like privatized prisons and other state privatization of efforts. But you're saying also that this is not that. Yeah, basically, you're a privatized organization, right?
Correct.
You're a nonprofit. Okay. But you're providing these services, but you're just not the state.
Exactly. And what we would do is we would contract with the state. We would receive a reimbursement to provide those services. Now, having said that, in looking at what it costs to provide these services, the community would still need to fundraise and or generate monies from the community to put into the system to be able to pay for the entire amount. So we have a group that up in Fort Worth who's doing a fantastic job, who's been doing this model, been implementing community-based model, and has been talking to the legislature about lessons learned and the cost that it takes to create a good network. And the legislature's listening, and they've been very open, and I think we see that it's reflected in Senate Bill 11 and the fiscal note that's attached to that.
And Katie Ulse, is that also your take?
It is. I think what's important to recognize when you talk about privatization is nearly all services to children and families at any level of intervention with Child Protective Services is done by private providers all over the state through contract based out of Austin. Senate Bill 11 restructures contracts to localize the services, have them better coordinated, and the contracts will be performance-based, meaning that the state will have oversight to make sure that they're actually buying the outcomes that they want.
And what about added flexibility to the people who are providing those services?
Absolutely. It gives them more flexibility. These are professionals. These are folks who have missions, who have been around for decades, in some cases a century. Their livelihood is caring for children and supporting families. And so Senate Bill 11 addresses the structural changes and sets the course for that. And then the legislature did appropriate millions of dollars to begin that implementation around the state. They do not think it's going to be any cheaper, but they know that they're going to have to invest, and they did that.
Our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980 if you want to join our conversation as we talk about reforms made to CPS at the recent legislative session. Tamer is on the line, and Tamer, we're on the air. Go ahead. Welcome to
yes,
the source.
I just wanted to bring to the attention of your listeners and the folks here on the panel that all of these changes came directly from litigation that was brought against the state and won in federal court. And this is extremely difficult for folks to have to bring forth litigation, and it's an expensive process. It's a very uncertain process. In this case, in particular, it was expensive. It was a federal court. It was very lengthy, but it ended with folks winning, and it's basically a judgment against the state where the judge is going to be monitoring the state and an excoriating opinion. The judge basically called out the state of Texas for being absolutely incompetent with respect to the foster care program. And also, it's coming for the rest of CPS. It's not just the foster care program that needs help. So I don't think the state deserves credit. It was basically forced upon them through extensive litigation, and they're still being monitored, and they fought every inch of the way. The other thing I have to say is about privatization is that that's a great deal as long as the state continues to pick up the bill. But if they say, we're just going to give you a block grant, but you need to take care of all the needs that our kids have, well, sometimes those needs outpace the amount of the block grant, and folks have to keep cutting back and cutting back to be able to try to provide for those kids. So I think we have to be careful about that. The state continues to try to shirk its responsibility and has to be forced by courts to live up to responsibility. And we still have to wait and see whether they're going to do that. So those are my comments. Thank you.
All right, Tamara, thank you for that background. I really appreciate you bringing that to our attention. So Dimple Patel, Senior Policy Analyst for Tax Protects. Anything about Tamara's analysis that needs to be corrected?
I think he's pretty spot on about that. I think one of the most important things that was brought up in the lawsuit was the caseloads of the caseworkers. So when you have a really high caseload, whether you're in a public system or private system, it is impossible to serve the children in the way that they need to be served. And so having more manageable caseloads by adding additional workers is really critical to ensuring that kids remain safe, whether they're in the foster care system or whether they're with their family or not, and also just ensuring that we're getting those kids the services that they need.
And we've seen it before with the Texas legislature that they can be very generous in one session, and the next session they could call all that money back. We're seeing that now with school finance. They cut taxes, property taxes across the state a few years ago, and they provided extra money to make up that shortfall, and now they're pulling that money back and putting school districts across the state in crisis. So if they follow that pattern, you know, another session or two down the road, and Annette Rodriguez, that this money could evaporate.
Well, my hope is that it won't. I think they recognize that this is a vulnerable population that they're dealing with. I think they made the commitment this session to make some significant changes and to continue to look at what changes need to be made in the future. And so I'm going to remain optimistic and hope that they do not cut back on the investment that they made during this session.
But it's all about keeping pressure on the lawmakers. But Katie Ulz, when you were talking to lawmakers as they were moving forward with these new laws and these policies over at the Texas Alliance for Child and Family Services, what was the mood?
It was really exciting to be working at the Capitol this session talking about child protection, because it's the first time in my years of working with the legislature that there has been such alignment by the governor, the lieutenant governor, the speaker, and both chambers, the Senate and the House, and both sides of the aisle. The difficulty was there were so many good ideas and so many thoughts and bills, trying to corral all of those into legislation that can pass and the funding that would be needed to go with those. But it was exciting.
But to Tamara's point, that this was the result of a federal judge's ruling that the CPS foster care program was not meeting the standards. It was violating the rights of the students of the children who were in the system. We've seen this before, and the lawmakers can react in a number of different ways. One of them is they can begrudgingly do just as little as possible just to try to stave off federal control, or they can actually try to come to the table and find real solutions.
In my conversations with the legislature, the litigation that the state is currently under did not come up. What I could see and feel was that there was a true desire to improve the system for Texas children and families. We do not have a final order. That litigation is continuing. The federal judge did issue an interim opinion last year that said the state has a lot more work to do. But the state has their own plan and their own system improvement plan that's been underway for a while. So I'm hoping that we'll start to see the data and outcomes there.
Back to the phone lines with John. And John, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm a teacher for the other 9 months out of the year and one of the required reporters. And my question is, how much is being done to increase prevention and intervention as opposed to waiting until after the crisis happens when CPS gets involved?
Thanks for that great call, John. Appreciate it. Good question. And Dimple Patel.
Sure. So we saw a modest increase in prevention funding this session. We had hoped that there would be a larger increase, but I think the majority of the focus in terms of the Department of Family and Protective Services budget really went towards what we can do to repair the foster care system and the CPS system. But we saw a $7 million increase to the Nurse Family Partnership and other prevention programs that work with families before they ever get involved in the CPS system. And we think that that's a really important division of CPS. We know in such an austere budget cycle, this legislative session, that funding could have been cut and it wasn't. So I think that that speaks volumes of where the legislature is focused on really kind of preserving and ensuring that the prevention department at CPS grows.
And what does the prevention department do? What is that program that you mentioned?
So the Nurse Family Partnership.
Say it again slowly.
The Nurse Family Partnership.
Okay.
Yes. So they are an evidence-based program. They work with moms while they're pregnant and up until the child is age two in basically being involved in their lives and supporting them in parent support education. They come out and it's a home visiting program. So they visit with the family once a week or a couple of times a month and see that family so that they don't have to become involved in the CPS system, essentially. They give them the skills that they need to be a better parent before CPS ever has to intervene.
And Annette Rodriguez, do you see this as, you know, money well spent?
Absolutely. Half of the children's shelter's work is done in prevention. We have a Nurse Family Partnership program. We've had it for over 6 years now, and we have seen fantastic success stories where we've had very vulnerable families, moms who don't have a support system, who work very closely with their nurses for 2 years. They become like a life coach to these moms, and we see both mom and children thriving, and that's exactly what we want to see. We want to see children in safe, loving, nurturing homes where they don't have to be touched by the Child Protective Service system.
Katie Ulz over at Texas Alliance for Child and Family Services, was there like a special bill that you wanted to get passed that didn't actually get out of committee or anything like that?
I don't think so. There were a lot of great bills that when we thought that they were on life support and going to die, we worked with a lot of the legislators to make sure they got attached as amendments. So a lot of the amendments that you see added, especially at the late hour when the clock gets, time is crunched, you start to see some of those bills get added, and then that happened.
And Annette Rodriguez, when you interacted with lawmakers, what was that like for you?
It was very collaborative. I think to echo what Katie shared earlier, is they really came to the table wanting to find a solution for Child Protective Services. I believe genuinely that our legislatures want to see the best for children, and they're trying to do the best. And they reached out to many of us. They reached out to Katie. They reached out to me as they were drafting policy and drafting bills. They would get our comments and our thoughts before it was presented. And so I felt like it was a very collaborative effort.
Did you ever come down and get a tour? The children's shelter, your facility?
Absolutely. We invite our legislatures over all the time, and I want to say I think every one of our Bexar County delegation has been out to the shelter.
And what would they normally see?
Well, they would come and they would see our emergency shelter. So on our campus, we have our emergency shelter that has 66 beds, and children who are newborn up to the age of 16 who've been recently removed from their homes because of suspicion of abuse, abandonment, or neglect. And so they get to meet some of our children and get to interact with the children that are coming right out of our community.
And so how long is a child typically staying at the children's shelter?
At the emergency shelter, typically they can stay up to 90 days, but the average stay is about 45 days. And during those 45 days, the CPS caseworker is doing their investigations. They're talking to neighbors, they're talking to teachers, they're talking to whoever is an important person in that child's life to get a full picture of what's going on, so the determination can be made whether that child goes back home or whether that child needs to be removed.
Okay, we're going to come back from this break. We're going to speak with State Representative Ina Mahadas, a District 124 here in San Antonio, about her take on what we ended up with reforms to CPS. And our phone lines are open if you got a question or a comment. 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about reforms made in the recent legislative session. They put more money in the budget. They passed new laws that give more flexibility to service providers, private service providers, like we have the Children's Shelter here in San Antonio. But what else did we get, and how did we get here? We're joined by State Representative Ina Mijares. She is the District 124 representative here in San Antonio, and she took the lead in many of these bills that went through the session, and she was also named Rookie of the Year by Texas Monthly. And so, Representative Mijares, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Appreciate being a part of this today.
So tell me, what did you think of the reforms that were passed and signed into law?
Hello?
Yes. Can you hear me? What did you think of the reforms? I know, did you get everything that you wanted? All right. I guess she's not able to hear me.
I can hear you now.
Okay. All right. All right. So what did you think of the reforms? Were you shooting for more? Did you get what you wanted?
You know, it's an initial first step. I was very delighted that the governor, lieutenant governor, and the speaker of the House, the big three, understood that this was an emergency item that needed to be dealt with, and we couldn't push it aside any longer. These reforms were needed, so I'm pleased with the progress that was made on several of these bills. And again, this is just the first step, so the work is going to go beyond the 85th legislative session. We'll be continuing to work in the interim and on into the future.
I want to ask you about one specific amendment that caught my eye. It was a ban on vaccinations that children who were. So what is that about?
So essentially, you know, the vaccination debate has always been controversial. Essentially, you have a group of lawmakers, a small group of lawmakers that don't believe in vaccinating children. They think the vaccinations cause more harm than good. So they have thrown in an amendment there to prevent, in their eyes, unnecessary vaccinations. So that was a highly contested debate on the floor, and they were able to secure that amendment within the bill.
So what does that mean? So if a child is removed from a home and is brought into the foster care system, and they realize that this child has not received a measles vaccine or a polio vaccine or any of the, you know, major vaccines, does that prevent that child from still getting those vaccinations?
You know, essentially, you're going to look at needing parental consent. So although a child is removed, it does not mean that, you know, parental consent is not required. They will still need to get that. You know, but it essentially just means that the worker can't necessarily make that decision on their own. They would also need to go and get, you know, medical advice, get advice from a professional of whether a vaccination is required.
Okay. That aside, that one amendment aside, so it tells you that just getting these things through the legislature is a tricky business, right?
Yes, it is very, very tricky and difficult.
But you have a lot to point to as a success because you're a Democrat and was this a bipartisan effort?
Very much a bipartisan effort. So Speaker Strauss, what he did was he put together a work group beginning in the summer of 2016 of bipartisan representatives that he knew had a passion for children and reforming the Child Protective Services system. So I was very pleased that he appointed me on this work group. And, you know, we all had children at the forefront of our minds, and we were able to work well together. It's nice to be able to come together on an issue where we can work together, be open-minded, listen to each other, and do, you know, put forth the best policy that we can. So it was definitely a bipartisan effort.
So the state still has to convince a federal judge that Texas doesn't need help with its child welfare system, that we've got things well in hand. Do you think that's going to happen?
You know, we're like I said, we just started, but I think we are on a good path for that. I think we're definitely showing good faith effort, and, you know, I hope that we can work together with the federal judge. I know the governor has a difference of opinion and doesn't believe that the courts should be involved in this decision making. But, you know, we need to work together on behalf of the children of Texas to make sure that we correct the wrongs and make sure that we avoid any problems in the future.
Now, they've made the law was passed, I believe, to make a separate agency, removing of CPS from into more of a separate agency. Is that right? Not under the Health and Human Services?
Right. It's a standalone agency. So essentially, it's taken out of HHSC.
And why is that a good idea?
So now Because it avoids a lot of red tape. They'll be directly responsible. The department will be directly responsible to the governor. There's going to be more accountability, more transparency. So it's good to just make it a standalone agency without, HHAC has to deal with so many other departments. So now it can just stand alone and just be accountable directly to the governor.
But was this recently folded into that agency? That was like not that long ago.
Right. But we believe that in part of our work group discussions that this department, it's dealing with the children that the state has taken care, custody, and control of. And so it should be on its own, standalone on its own, and no longer have to be lost in a department, and essentially just be directly responsible to the governor. And I think it's a great idea that it stands alone. And I know for a fact many of the caseworkers and departments were very, very happy to be pulled out of the HHSC.
So the 2018-2019 state budget gives the Department of Family and Protective Services $4 billion, up from $3.5 billion from the previous two-year cycle. That's quite a bump in money, half a billion dollars. Is that going to be enough?
It's a bump, but it's not necessarily enough. It's heading in the right direction. And as you know, our hands were tied with the drop in oil and our revenue. We were really working with a tight budget. So I'm very happy that we were able to find funding to give to the department. For a very long time, the department, has not been, their funding hasn't been up to par. And so now at least we are in the right direction of giving them the funding that's needed. However, we got to get the agency going and being efficient. So at least we are on the right path, that I believe in the future in the 86, we're going to have to continue the increasing funding and giving that revenue stream to the department to make sure that they're successful and to making sure that our children are definitely taken care of.
So it seems like the lawmakers are having to walk a tightrope. You're trying to provide structure and a framework in order to make sure that children are receiving the care that they need once they get put into the CPS system. But also you want to provide a flexibility so that we have a community-based care, because different kids have different needs and different communities are able to provide different services or have different capacity. So how are you able to do that?
We were very lucky. So we were able to look at there was a pilot program in Fort Worth that had this community-based model. And so we were able to see the progress that they made. And we are modeling this community-based bill after the Fort Worth pilot program. And so what's going to happen is it'll be broken up into different regions and then slowly rolled region by region and come back in the 86th legislative session to see if it's working, to see if it's being effective, if there's any problems, and we can address it in the 86th. But, what it takes is it takes everyone's involvement, not just the lawmakers. It takes the nonprofits. It takes the children's courts and judges. It takes everybody having a key role in their communities to ensure that, we're getting this right. And I'm hoping that we are in that right direction, but what I like about the bill is that it's a slow rollout and we can come back in the 86 to address any potential issues if there's a problem with any of the community-based services.
So foster parents are a key component of trying to provide these services and help these children. What relief did foster parents get out of the session?
I believe one of the things that I really value foster parents that came to testify during the 85th session in the committees where these bills were heard, one of the things they stressed was that their voices weren't taken into account during the court proceedings. They are the ones that have the most, they're taking care of these children. They have a connection with these children. And they still weren't being heard. So I believe one of the things that we've done was to make sure that they have the same voice in the system, that judges can listen to what they have to say, that they can participate in proceedings. But most importantly, we want to encourage more capacity, more people to want to be foster parents. We have a shortage of places to put these children. We no longer want these children sleeping in offices. So we're hoping definitely to make the system less burdensome on them and we'll also encourage them to want to open up their homes and bring in children so that they can definitely provide them a place, a nurturing place where they can grow and be healthy and eventually find a stable family to be with.
And Representative, in the last minute we have here, what will you be looking for to see that the reforms are on the right track?
You know, a couple of the bills are that we've filed have requested that reports be made, whether it's to see that how the CPS system in terms of caseloads and work morale and employees. So we'll get a report on the department itself. You know, these are things that we'll study in terms of results. So one of the things that I do, I'm very hands-on, is I always make sure to come out into my community, talk with the children's court judges, talk with the advocates, see what's working, see what's not working. You got to be really active and go out there. And if it's not even in San Antonio, different parts of Texas, and getting feedback. And most importantly, talking with caseworkers and making sure they're the ones on the front lines. They're the ones out there each day with these children and getting honest feedback from them.
So it sounds like you'll be looking at the data. Yeah, it sounds like you'll be looking at the data and also talking to the people with boots on the ground. State Representative Ina Definitely. Mijares, thank you so much. District 124. At the front lines of trying to reform CPS here in Texas. The phone line is 210-614-8980 if you want to join our conversation. The Source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about child welfare, foster care legislation in the recent legislative session. CPS got some reforms. Are they enough? And what would it look like moving forward? We're joined by Katie Olst. She's the Executive Director of the Texas Alliance of Child and Family Services, Annette Rodriguez, President and CEO of the Children's Shelter San Antonio, and Dimple Patel, Senior Policy Analyst for Tex Protects. And we just got off the line with State Representative Ina Mijares. She's with District 124, and she, as a freshman in the legislature, really took the lead in trying to bring these reforms about. Our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And we have Deanna on the line. And Deanna, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. I just had a comment. Years ago, my sister had lost her kids due to alcoholism, and she lost them to an auntie that took them. Had she gone through the CPS system, had you know, CPS gotten involved, she would have gotten the care and the help that she needed. So, you know, there's a negative stigma with CPS, but I think that, well, I know, I work now as a CASA, and I know that the ideal situation is to, you know, get the family reunified, get the parents the help that they need. And a lot of times, you know, that's what happens. And so I just kind of want to make the comment that, you know, even though CPS is seen as, you know, a negative thing, it's so important. And this new law is just, you know, listening to it, it sounds, it's like so integral in the process.
All right, Deanna, thank you for that call. I appreciate that. So let me ask you, Dimple Patel, you're also a former caseworker. People sometimes in CPS is in the same room. They're not always, they're kind of hesitant to actually talk about the actual problems because they're afraid of their kids being taken away. I hear about this all the time with people who are dealing with drug recovery. They don't want CPS to know what's going on as they're trying to get back on the right track. So I think that kind of goes to what our caller was talking about, Deanna.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you know, one point I want to make is that for every tragic story or circumstance we hear about or negative fact or negative story we see about CPS, there's hundreds of other thousands of families that CPS is working with successfully and helping keep together, whether that's keeping a child with their biological parents or helping a child be placed with their grandmother or grandfather or relative. There's a lot of success stories out there that we don't hear about every day. But I think it's family engagement is a really critical piece of being a CPS caseworker. It's a skill that takes time to learn. And when you have a revolving door at CPS of caseworkers that just leave within a year or 2 years, you don't get to really learn those skills. So I think those are really important skills of getting a mom or a dad to open up about the help that they need, but then getting them the help they need. Those are things that caseworkers do every single day, but you've got to build on your skills. And so I think CPS, with reducing the turnover with these salary increases, is really helping with improving the quality of the caseworkers that they have and training treating them better.
But the caller, Deanna, mentioned how kids are taken from one family member and put with another family member. And so is that something that CPS finds valuable, as in keeping the families engaged?
Absolutely. So when a child can't safely remain with their mother or father and they have to go into care, one of the questions a caseworker always asks is if there are any relatives or fictive relatives that the child could go with. And so that's called kinship care. There was a bill this last legislative session, House Bill 4, that actually helps provide monetary support to those kinship caregivers in the form of a monthly payment. So if we're placing with a grandmother, for example, this will help facilitate getting a monthly payment to that grandmother so she can help take care of that child.
And Katie Ols, but sometimes it seems like, well, you're keeping them in a family that may not actually be, a high functioning family. I mean, how much investigation goes into before they make that decision?
There is definitely vetting, background checks, et cetera, but it's a very difficult job. I mean, no one wants to remove a child. It's incredibly painful for everybody involved. But when that difficult decision is made by the CPS worker and the judge, then the state is required to look for the least restrictive, best placement option for that child. And the state has been fortunate to embrace that and embrace families. And when the families can be protective, grandma, aunt, uncle, cousin, family friend, when that family member can be protective, it's absolutely the best placement for the child. But those kids do need supports. And so that's where organizations like the Children's Shelter can come in and help support those kinship caregivers and the moms and dads who are hoping to get their kids back.
And then Dimple Patel, as a former caseworker, y'all follow up and keep eye on the kids, or how's that work?
Absolutely. So there's still going to be a caseworker that's involved when a child is placed with a relative caregiver. If they're in the conservatorship of the state, so if a case is open to CPS, a caseworker will still be involved and follow up with that family. One of the struggles that we face, though, is that caseworkers have really high caseloads, and so they can't support the child, the mother, and the grandmother. And so that's exactly where the Children's Shelter can step in and help provide some of those supports that might be missing. And that the grandmother may, critically need.
Okay, another caller, Joshua. And Joshua, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I am looking for some advice on how to intervene with my neighbor. She needs help. She self-admittedly works long hours, comes home, does the best she can for her kids. One in five, they're terrific, and this is supposed to be a fresh start for them. But I'm finding myself in this ambiguous area where I don't know how to intervene. She's got some sketchy people coming over now, and she's still in recovery. She's doing good, but I don't know how to. I asked her, does she need some help? CPS doesn't always take kids away. I didn't know what to tell her, and I don't know that she would listen. Who do I call, and how do I? I mean, she's my neighbor. I don't.
Right.
I need to stay on good terms with her. So what can I do?
Joshua, thank you for calling. We appreciate that. And first thing you're doing is that you're keeping your eyes open, you're watching, and you're caring. So that's the first step. You got that right. So let me go over to Annette Rodriguez, president of and CEO of the Children's Shelter San Antonio.
Joshua, I want to echo what David just said. I appreciate that you are being vigilant and you're looking out for the children in your community. And what I would do is I would approach your neighbor, let her know that you were listening to this radio show and that you heard about some great services that are out in the community. Children's Shelter is one of those. We provide parenting services. One of our parenting programs is called iParent, and we can either go into the home or they can come out and get some support, and our worker will work with them. They'll do an assessment to see where her strengths are, where some of her challenges are, and then we'll create an individualized plan for her and her children to make sure that she's connected to the resources and the services that she needs. And this has no connection to Child Protective Services. This is actually a preventative measure to help her strengthen her family so she can keep her children.
But what if, Joshua's story, there are other stories out there, maybe things are even worse elsewhere, and there's a parent or there's a neighbor or someone else who sees kids who are being neglected and they need more help, and maybe it's time to call CPS. When do you do that?
I think if you have a strong suspicion that children are being neglected and or abused, you should absolutely call the...
Neglected means what? What to define that?
Neglected means that the children are not receiving the supervisory or supervision that they need, the care that they need. They're not receiving their basic needs.
So they're not getting fed?
They're not getting fed.
They're filthy.
Their medical needs may not be met. They're being left long hours alone all day long without supervision and appropriate care.
So it's a tragedy waiting to happen. You want to avoid that. You know, I didn't know, you know, I should have stepped in earlier. And who do you call? What do you do? So you want to take that, Kitty?
Sure. Not only is it a good idea, but it's actually the law that if you suspect abuse or neglect of children, you must call and report that. And the number is 1-800-252-5400. And CPS are the good guys. They are not going to come out and remove every child. They are going to come out, they're going to assess the situation, assess the risk, and then, more often than not, connect that family to services.
Right. So the child, I mean, maybe the kids would be removed temporarily, brought to the children's shelter through emergencies. And then someone, maybe a caseworker, like you used to be, Dimple, will come to the house, assess the situation, and see maybe there are some social services that can bring in and help the family. And they can then, a reunification, that's, you're nodding your head.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's reunification. So just to put this in perspective, I think last year in Bexar County, there were about 25,000 investigations that took place. Of those 25,000, there were 5,000 confirmed cases of child abuse and or neglect. And of those 5,000, there was about 2,500 children that were actually removed from their homes. And so they do have a really good job of really drilling down and figuring out what the situation is and what is the most appropriate resources and the most appropriate response to that investigation or to that call.
And Dimple Patel, when you were a caseworker, did something like this happen to you?
All the time. So I was an investigator. So it was my job to actually go out and investigate the abuse and neglect and then make the decision.
And what kind of situations would you see?
So I was an investigator for 6 years, so I worked a diverse amount of cases. Towards the end, I was working child fatalities and serious injuries, sexual abuse cases. So I've worked kind of every type of abuse and neglect report that's out there. And the majority of the cases that CPS investigates are not confirmed for abuse and neglect. They're actually either ruled out or just closed. We usually offer the family services, and then we close the case. And so it was a really small percentage of families that actually do abuse and neglect their children.
Right. So then you would go to a home, someone reported the case, and you needed an investigator to show up. You showed up and with your clipboard and started looking around.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was there, it was a clipboard. Now they've got these tablets and these nice computers. They've upgraded their technology so they can do it faster. But when I was there, it was definitely a tablet. You talk to the kids in a private environment, maybe the bedroom or preferably at school, ask them about what's going on. And then you talk to the parents and ask how you can help them. I think that was the biggest question I always started with and ended with was, what can I do to help make parenting easier for you? What do you need from me? And I think when you ask that question, you actually get somebody who's willing to trust you and seek your help and your support.
And do you think these new laws that were passed and extra money now that's been put in the budget, it's going to be even better for these parents?
I think it's getting better. I think we are on the right track. I think fixing the turnover issue, getting foster care capacity where it needs to be, these are all the steps in the right direction. We still have a lot more work to do, though.
Okay, and we will continue covering this topic here on The Source. Dimple Patel, she's the Senior Policy Analyst for Tex Protects. Annette Rodriguez, President and CEO of the Children's Shelter San Antonio. Katie Ulse, the Executive Director of the Texas Alliance of Child and Family Services. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.